Well, good afternoon, and welcome to this afternoon's session. So this session is such an update on the status of the nutrient reduction plans. So we have, it's not a big session, but we're fortunate to have three very good speakers that are very experienced with this topic. They'll give us updates from their states and other perspectives. This continues to be an important topic. By the way, my name is John Sloan. I'm with the National Great Rivers Research and Education Center in Alton, Illinois. So we're literally on the banks of the Mississippi River. And we just hosted the most recent nutrient reduction hypoxia task force meeting at our facility and at Lewis and Clark Community College. So I know Mark David was there. So we got a pretty recent update on that. So this continues to be important topic. The task force has been around for a while. Also, recent report just came out too, looking at kind of the trends in the size of the hypoxic zone in the Gulf of Mexico. Really hasn't changed in the last 14 to 15 years. So this still continues to be an important topic, and we're still finding ways to really have an impact on the nutrient load to the Gulf of Mexico. So our first speaker. Dr. Snyder, who is going to give a talk on spring nutrient flux to the Gulf of Mexico and nutrient balance in the Mississippi River Basin.
Thank you, John, for laying the background for a bit of the information I'll share today and comments that I'll make on this important topic. I look across this room and I think I recognize about 90% of you by first name in here, so I feel very comfortable with that, but by the same token, I know you know me, so I have to watch my time closely so I don't invade on my colleagues that will share the podium here momentarily after I get through making my comments. I do want to acknowledge Dr. Scott Morrell, who worked with me in looking at some of the data that we'll share with you today, and his assistance with some of the analyses. And the good news, he's here in the room today, so when the tough questions come, I will quickly lean on Scott. As was mentioned, we've been dealing with hypoxia in the Gulf of Mexico for some decades. I have been personally involved since probably more intensively since 1997. And working with scientists that contributed information to the Hypoxia Federal and State Agency Task Force back a number of years ago and reinforced in 2013 with their updated plan that we want to reduce the load of nitrogen and phosphorus reaching the Gulf of Mexico from the Mississippi and Chafalaya Rivers by 45%. And that was to achieve our 2015 goal of 5,000 square kilometers in size of the hypoxic zone in July when it's annually measured by Nancy Rabelais and her team at the Louisiana University's Marine Consortium. Now, our efforts to reduce this nutrient load to the Gulf don't stop with the water quality concerns there, but they extend to the within the entire basin concerns. The research up until 2014, just to give a bit of a background on this here, and I'll just pull a few of the selected papers that have addressed the modeling of the load versus the hypoxic area. Many of them started with total load and then gravitated more toward the seasonal load. And as you see here across these ranges of years and the scientists that have contributed to our understanding of the challenges have had varying successes in the predictability of their models to relate nutrient load, stream flow, and including nitrate in particular, and in some cases including some phosphorus loading, so that we can explain somewhere on between 60% and 80% of the annual variability in a hypoxic area. More recently, Dr. Rabelais and others began to look at these same loading estimates in predicting hypoxic volume, but their R-square in that prediction remains below 60%. Then, as we consider the fact that we want to reduce those loads, we need to understand what is contributing to those loads. And that's really the purpose of my discussion today with you, is to begin to look at this a little bit more. And I share that Booth and Campbell in 2007 had done a modeling approach for data from 90 to 2002, including fertilizer and runoff factor, and showing that 59% of that load was attributed to fertilizer and runoff, but also including these other factors with an R-square of 0.65. And then they also looked at the April to July delivery that increased the R-square. And then Mark, you know, forgive me here if I perhaps don't quote you perfectly accurately, but you've done a great deal of work in this area, and in your modeling efforts, looking at, I think you said 152 or 153 watersheds to develop these relationships, and in demonstrating that, you know, there are a number of factors that help us explain a large part of the variability. You focused on nutrient uptake, harvest removal in eight crops, but you found that the N inputs themselves are not a very good predictor of the riverine nitrate N yields, nor were other N balances. And so these yields on a kilograms of N per hectare basis seem to correspond a lot with the productivity of the soils across these regions in the Corn Belt, as highlighted here. Because we've not made the progress we want with the water quality in the Mississippi River Basin and in reducing the size of the hypoxic zone, states, as compelled by the Environmental Protection Agency, have developed nutrient loss reduction strategies. And both Mark and Dave Mulla will talk about what's going on in their respective states. And so I don't want to take too much time with this, but just to say that it seems like in many states, and I won't speak for Illinois or Minnesota, but many of these states are focusing on the annual loads and total N and total P because of the hypoxia action plan. But when you look at the modeling relationships, it seems to me that, has seemed to me anyway, that we should be focusing more on the seasonal load, because that seasonal load can perhaps be more tied to specific practices in the field. And it's there that we want to intervene and do a better job of managing our nutrients in fields to prevent these major losses that typically occur in spring throughout much of the basin. So objectives today for the work that we'll share were to compare the April-May and the April plus May nitrate N flux and the ortho P flux to the Gulf against total N input, fertilizer N input, cropland harvested area, crop harvest removal of N, net annual N balance, net annual N per cropland hectare. And we're using publicly available data, the USGS data that's posted on a website that we looked at over the years, crop harvested area from USDA NASS, fertilizer consumption data from the APCO and TFI annual report, and then data that IP&I has put together that's based off the Ruddy paper in 2006 to some respect, but we have used an interpolation approach to include nutrient uptake and removal by 21 crops that we think covers about 95% of the nutrient utilization throughout the Mississippi River Basin. Now, I said 95%. I should say that those crops account for 95% of the use, but really 66% of the total U.S. fertilizer N consumption occurs within the Mississippi River Basin, so I wanted to correct that misstatement there. The history of our nutrient GIS software began in 2006. It's been updated several times, and we believe we've improved it in this final version so that we're estimating removal beyond just the 21 crops, but the other crops that are out there, because we have California and Florida, they have hundreds of crops that they have to contend with, but we just don't have enough data to really go in and deal with each of those individually, so we work with the majority. The basic model that NUGIS depends upon is the farm fertilizer input, recoverable manure, biological N fixation, and then we subtract crop removal at harvest to get a partial nutrient balance. We use data from the Ag Census for every 5 years, and since 2007, we've begun to populate our database with 2008 annual data up to 2011, and so I will share that today. But in this balance recognizes a partial balance. It does not consider atmospheric deposition, nutrients in irrigation water, biosolids, soil erosion, or gassy sand emissions or leaching. This is an example of some of the output from our nutrient GIS software. And this shows within these hydrologic regions the removal to use. We look at many different indicators of nutrient performance. One is this removal to use ratio. And these data from 87 show that through the upper Mississippi River Basin, more than 70% of equivalent of the N applied is removed in the crop harvest each year. And of course, the more yellow that scenario pictorially, the better off we are. The redder the color masking on the graph, the more imbalanced we are with more nitrogen put on than is removed in crop harvest. And you can see these graphs changing over time to 2007, more green in 2007, but in 2011 we have areas that are more yellow. So this is a dynamic situation, and that's why we don't like to see a picking of an individual year or picking of a point in year 1 year and comparing against a point in the future. Instead, we really need to look at these data over time and how they're moving up and down and what's happening and contributing to those changes. Just a few charts, and forgive the simplicity of this, but I'm a very simple-minded person. And so Scott helped in me in putting this together. But what you see in this chart is that cropland harvested area, net annual end balance, net annual end per planted cropland hectare, had no relationship with the April nitrate flux, May flux, or the April plus May flux, very consistent with what Mark David reported in his work. But we use different sets of years in these analyses. And so we, in some sense, have independently reinforced, Mark's earlier observations. The significance here with a single asterisk is the 0.05 probability level. The two asterisks is 0.01. And the C here with stars indicates that we could have suspected outliers in these data points. Now, I show the next graph, and you're going to say, well, that's probably not as robust a data set as any of us would like to see, but we're working with the available data that we have. And again, we want to populate this with more years. But the statistics indicate that we can explain about 46% of the variation in May nitrate flux by the total N inputs throughout the Mississippi River Basin. But notice the wide confidence interval here. And so there's enough variability there that we can't explain it all. And I heard talks by several speakers earlier today suggesting that, well, if we could predict the weather and we could more accurately estimate what the weather is going to do to us, we could more perfectly manage nitrogen. So I think in the future we're still going to deal with this large uncertainty. But the question is, how can we minimize that uncertainty and get more retained in the crop and in the soil? We looked at the phosphorus analyses. And similar to the N, net annual P balance and P per planted cropland hectare had no relationship, significant relationship to April, May, or April plus May ortho P flux. But harvest removal of phosphorus had a significant relationship in the cropland harvested. And you might ask, well, if cropland harvested and cropland P removal goes up and the flux goes up, what does that mean? It just means perhaps the conditions are conducive to a good yielding environment, which also means adequate moisture to let nutrients leave the field in addition to getting them in the crop. So the hydrologic interactions here are very complex, and certainly I don't profess to begin to understand all of them. But we want to just say we are at a bit of a midpoint in our looking at these data, but recognize that total fertilizer and input, total nutrient input, total nutrient removal with the harvest, we believe can be fairly significant explainers of the May or the April plus May combined fluxes of nitrate. And then when we look at phosphorus, these relationships with crop harvest could be useful. And someone says, has asked, and you may during the discussion, what the significance of these relationships are as far as the proportion of the variability that's explained. But I'll just reveal my hand right now. The significance is greater with phosphorus than it is with nitrate among these nutrient use factors in explaining the April and May flux. And that begins to make a little sense when you consider the fact that we lose phosphorus from our farm fields primarily hydrologically. With nitrate, there are other loss pathways that factor in, so we have a higher R-square with the phosphorus relationships than we do with the nitrate. Future plans are that we continue to use these analyses and these approaches as we populate our NUGIS software database with more annual data as they become available, and maybe backing up in time and beginning to get those data incorporated. We're learning that these data that come from USDA and NAS, there's a lot of variation from year to year. And as we look at these, we find many, many weaknesses and holes that you possibly don't recognize unless you work with the data firsthand. So we hope we can work with USDA and others to make these data more robust and reliable from year to year to year. But we are set out in our efforts in the Institute to help farmers and agribusiness in partnering with university and government scientists and policymakers to advance what we call for our nutrient stewardship using the right nitrogen or nutrient source at the right rate, time, and place, to improve infield retention. We are looking at performance indicators to be able to suggest that agribusiness and farmers begin to track these specific indicators and look at their performance over trend in individual fields and farms, so that at some point we can perhaps aggregate those to a larger scale to get a better idea of the impact of our management practices. So those are our future plans. I just kind of give you a revelation of where the Institute is headed and looking at these relationships beyond just the agronomic performance. We are increasingly looking at the potential for using these same data to give us an indication how well we're doing environmentally. And this loss to the Gulf of Mexico is just one of the example opportunities we have. With that, John, I'll stop.